Welcome to Virtual School Assembly. I'm your host, Tyler Christensen. I'm a productivity speaker, author, and classroom teacher. Here at Virtual School Assembly, I interview Hollywood celebrities, professional athletes, Olympians, speakers, and educators who share messages of inspiration, education, and hope to better prepare you for an ever-changing and uncertain world. Thanks for joining us. Let's get started.
All right, welcome back to Virtual School Assembly. Today, our guest is Milan Ristic. Milan is a Serbian hurdler who has competed in the U.S. because he went to Cal Berkeley, but he represents Serbia in international competitions. He is the Serbian national record holder in the indoor 600 meters and the outdoor 110-meter hurdle events. Ristic's a member of the Serbian national team and has been for quite a while. However, I don't know if that's true, so we'll get into that in the interview, because now you're doing kind of moving away from the professional running and getting into the coaching side. So we'll get into that. But first, Milan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Good introduction. A little correction, 60-meter indoor hurdles. It's not 600. It's a little too much for me.
Oh, sorry. But, and I know that.
That's okay.
I totally know hurdles, but
that's
sorry.
Okay.
It's just messed up.
It's funny to me because I cannot run a lap, and a 600 is a lap and a half, so it's a little too much for me. And when I see people running, I just think, oh, man, these are really good athletes. How can they do this? I can't do it. You know, it's just a crazy little event for me, at least.
Yeah, that's funny. I'm not an elite runner, but this last year I ran a 52 miler. So I'll take the long ones. You can take the 60 meters. That sounds good.
Yeah, that's really good. I don't know if I do that in a whole month, maybe 2 months.
That's great. Well, so Milan, you have a different background from most of our guests. We've had a lot of professional athletes on the show, a lot of Olympians, and you know, a bunch of other sports, but your professional experience, and then of course your upbringing, you're spanning two different continents, you know, being raised in Serbia and then competing in college, coming out first to North Carolina, right? Asheville.
Yes.
and then transferring to Cal. So let's start with your childhood. What was it like growing up in Serbia? And tell us a little bit about Serbia. Most of our audience is here in America. So tell us a little bit about Serbia and what it was like growing up there.
Okay, Serbia is a beautiful country, a lot of good nature things to see, to do. One of the world wonders, it's called the Devil's Valley. Out of seven things in the whole world, we, a little country, a little smaller than North Carolina, have one of them. So that's a cool thing. It's half flat, half mountains. I grew up in the capital city of Belgrade, about 3 million people. Survived two wars when I was little, one when I was very little that I don't really remember, and the second one was in 99 when NATO was bombing Serbia. That has some scars, left some scars, let's put it that way. I was just old enough to understand what's going on and see things on the street that a 9 or 8 year old, a regular kid, would not be able to see, maybe not even in the movies. But it is what it is, you know. It makes you who you are today, and I think it made me a stronger person for sure. Mentally and maybe even physically, I can't say that, but mentally for sure, you know, some things you look at life and sometimes you get stuck in traffic and you just say, hey man, I'm stuck in traffic, you know, oh god, you know, you get frustrated. I get stuck in traffic, I don't really care, you know, stuck in traffic, oh well, you know, things like that. But grew up here. My elementary school was just two blocks away, about 5-minute walk. We don't have the school buses that takes us to schools. There is a whole bunch of schools in these neighborhoods. I wish I can show you around, but there's apartment buildings. Everybody lives in an apartment because it's the town. And then if you want to live in a house, you got to get away from the city, about 20 minutes away. Unless you have so much money that you can live in the Serbian Hollywood, which is basically close to downtown. And those houses are just crazy. So everybody lives in the apartment. I grew up here, with my mom and dad. When I was very little, my grandma and my grandpa lived in the same apartment, my dad's parents. So it was six of us in about 500 square feet, I would say. It's a 48 meter square. So I don't know. I think that's 500 feet squared.
Yeah.
It's a very small apartment. So we all grew up. My grandpa passed away quickly after I was born. Then my grandma passed away in 2007, I believe. And I stayed here with my parents. My sister got married in 2009, moved away, so I was the only one left. And I had a dream to come and run at the highest level. Well, that dream did not sound or look real up until, I don't know, I kind of made it in my head that I wanted to do this, I guess. Uh-huh. I started doing track in the fourth grade, and the teacher that, it was a physics PE teacher, she said, hey, we have this track meet, you want to come? Well, I grew up playing soccer all the time, you know, I just never even knew track was a sport, basically.
Right.
So I went to this track meet, and I dusted everybody. It was, I remember it was 80 meters run. You would never see that again anywhere. I don't think they still run that. But it was 80 meters, and I won that thing. I remember it was 12 seconds. Not an amazing time, but out of all these kids, I won in my little school district. So she said, you have two left legs, but you should go and try track. I said, okay. So growing up, started track, fourth grade, went back and forth, you know, do I want to do this? Do I not want to do this? There's no ball. You just go and run. It's kind of boring, you know. Cross country, I hated it, to be honest with you. And then high school started. I went to specialized high school. It was really, really hard academically to get into the school, first of all. And then after that, I just really didn't have time to do many other things. I tried to do better in school than in athletics, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's it was hard because I don't know. I wanted to be good at both, but you really cannot. If something is just pulling away, you have to be managing your time very well. So I tried to do that, and I stopped training for a little while. Then I went back to school, and well, I didn't go back to school. I was still in school. I started paying attention a little more to the school, and then I figured out, oh yeah, if I can pay attention in classes, I can do pretty well here without studying way too much at home. So I started paying attention in class a little more. As I was getting older, I figured out the system. I'm like, oh, I can do this, and I can do that, you know? Right. Of course, you have to give up some stuff, hanging out with your friends, you know? We have a lake here in town that everybody goes to. They will call you, hey, you want to go swim some? You want to ride a bike, whatever, you know, skateboard, whatever you want to do. But, hey, I have practice, I can go, you know, I have study, all these things. So you have to give something to be good at something else. Long story short, got to my fourth year of high school. The guy who was the best man at my wedding in 2012, he went to University of Nebraska. He said, hey, I'll make sure you go to U.S. for college if you want to run. And he told me that in 2008. Just to say this as a reference, in 2008, I ran hurdles 16 seconds. That is absolute trash. Let's put it that way. Not competitive at all. I think I can run it with no training. Well, now, after all these years, it seems just a time out of this world. But still, you know, he said, I'll make sure you go in 2010 when you graduate high school. So in 2010 come, I ran a little better, 14:50, so 14 and a half seconds, which was a little better than 16 and a half. And he helped me out, send about 550 emails to all coaches. I mean, we're talking about NCAA D1 championship teams, and they're just like, hey, we can't even give you books. Why are you emailing us? You know, but I was still, I made my mind. I want to do this. I want to get better. You know, I want to get my education. I want to get better in an athletic career. Let's do this. So we had about 15 offers, solid offers after all those 500 emails. And we picked on them. We sat down one day and looked at Google Maps and say, hey, Manhattan, we can't go there. They party too much. You're going to go crazy there. You're going to go to this little country town. Ah, you're going to go crazy. There's nothing there, you know. And we picked Asheville just because of the geographic location and the school and the coach that was there. We said, hey, you can really be good here. Why not go here? Went there, 2010, started U.S. career. And 2013, transferred to college. But back to your question, yeah, that was my time growing up in Serbia up until 2010. Yeah.
So a couple things I want to dig into there. First, so you're starting to do track, you know, going into high school and stuff, and you find out you're good. Hurdling is not the most glamorous sport, even in the track and field world. I mean, your sprinters do the 100 meters, the 200. Hurdlers are kind of their own little world. They do their own little thing. So why was it that you decided to go into hurdling? I'm sure you could have excelled in other events. Why hurdling?
Just a funny story. There was a track meet, I think I was sixth grade, mm-hmm. and we had only one indoor facility in the whole country. It was four lanes, and it was about 80 meters long. There's no people to watch you. They pack up at the end of the track, and basically you just stop into them. You run and you stop running into them. You stop when you run into them. That's my point. So mm-hmm. we have a track meet there, and there was a hurdle race, 60-meter hurdles, and they were calling some names, and nobody showed up. And I looked at my coach. I was like, hey, man, you think I can do this? And I was like, he kind of brushed it off. He was like, you're sure you want to do this? Kind of didn't want anybody to hear, because there was nobody but just me. I said, yeah, let me do this. So we went to the starter, I guess, the ref, the judge, whichever one you want to call him, went to that guy and said, hey, we have one. Oh, he's not on the list. He can't run. Just let him run, man. Come on. This is fun. This is small kids. Let him run. And they let me run. And I ran a pretty decent time at that time for a kid at the sixth grade. And since then, I was just like, man, I could be good at this. So we just kind of focused into the hurdles. And that was just the beginning of it. And then I had some bad injury, not running track, playing soccer. I almost broke my ankle and couldn't hurdle. And so that kind of drew me back from hurdling. I was just pure sprinter after that, let's put it that way. And in college, I went back. I think we sent emails as a sprinter for 100 and 200 meters, and we just threw in those hurdle times that I ran by 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I went in as a sprinter, I like to say that. But in college, we had a guy on the team, and he ran hurdles. I just thought, in back of my head, I said, I think I can do better than this guy. You know, I'm very competitive. Anything I see, I analyze, and I'm like, okay, I can do this better, or I can do this worse. I don't want to try this. I will try this, you know. So we have this, my teammate in college, and I asked a coach, I said, hey, man, can I do some hurdling? And he said, well, you know, you told me you have this injury. I said, please, just let me do it in practice, you know. It was the beginning of the season. We had no competitions for about 4 months. Even if I got injured, I would be able to bounce back pretty young. You know, we have a good facility to rehab. He finally one day said, hey, okay, you can hurdle. And that's how I got back into hurdling. But yeah.
That's awesome. So you're competing now in the U.S. at UNC Asheville, and then you decided to transfer to Cal. Was that for, you know, just greater competition? Did you transfer the academic side of things? What initiated that transfer?
See, let me go back a little bit. I always wanted to run the Olympic Games. Let's mm-hmm. say not always, but at a point where I figure I could do this, I kind of decided, hey, I can possibly make an Olympic team and go and compete for my country, you know. Right. In Asheville, it's a big South Conference. Some events are very, very strong. Some events are not very strong, you know. And I'm always looking for the next step and the next step and the next step. And yes, one of the reasons why I left was the competition. And another reason, maybe academics, but at that time, I just wanted something new, you know. I also just got married in 2012 in college, and I left my wife a whole country away, you know. She right. stayed at UNC Asheville. I went to Cal. We managed, you know, we're still married 8 years later.
Good.
So yeah, it's went for a competition and academics, but then it led to other things later, you know.
Okay, cool. So, and then obviously you had a lot of success at Cal, and for now about a decade, you've been part of the Serbian national team. Mm-hmm. Kind of take us through that progression. Like, how did you first make the national team, and how did you kind of take that, your experience at Cal to go pro with running?
Okay. I made my first national team as a junior. It was a Balkan Championships, and at that time, we had so much talent that it was really, really hard to make that team. Mm-hmm. That was in 2009. I ran at Balkan Championships, got fourth in three events that I was in. No medal. I was devastated. Man, mm-hmm. that was bad. I got fourth in the 200, 110 hurdles, and 4x1 relay. And I guess some people got injured later, you know, and I was invited to be a part of my – I call it the big boys team, which is a senior team for my relay. And that was in 2010. We had the European Team Championships, which is national teams battling for the European title. Mm-hmm. We hosted it here in Belgrade, and they invited me, and I was the fastest guy in the country. So I was kind of the sub for mm-hmm. the relay. Ran the relay. We did really well. They looked at me, and they just told me, hey, you have so much talent. Why don't you just really, really get into this, because you can do some big things. And I just kind of looked at them. I said, I'm going to the U.S. That was in 2000. That was middle of the summer. You know, I'm going in August, and this is in June or July. And I just looked at him. I said, I wish you know that I'm going. I didn't tell nobody, you know, I was just kind of like, I'm going to disappear and do my own thing. You know, I never knew that I was going to be where I'm at today. Kind of knew in the back of my mind, but I never wanted to, you know, when you expect something and when you're pushing for something so much and it doesn't happen, you kind of get disappointed. Well, my mindset is don't expect anything until it happens because you get disappointed. So, yeah, that's what happened in my senior team. Made it in 2010 and 2011. I ran faster with my coach and later professional coach, Joel Williams. He is at UNC Asheville right now. Ran decently. I made it to NCAA regionals at UNC Asheville. I was the first one out not to make it to nationals. I was the 13th in East Region and 24 makes it. So I was 25th in the nation my second year. Kind of a bummer. It was 1/100 of a second. My good friend, who he ran for Pitt, but then he transferred to LSU. He edged me. He was in that last heat. I was in until he ran. So yeah, funny story. I was he was my roommate later in at the Drake Relays professional race. I think it was last year actually. But anyways, 2011, ran a little faster. 2012, I made it to indoor nationals. I was 12th in the nation from a small school in Asheville. And then, you know, all the athletes and friends talk, hey, you should come train with me, or you should come here, you should come there, you know. I requested to transfer to University of Nebraska, 2012, and I had scholarship papers in front of me, and I signed it. And, you know, I was just getting married that year, and I said, you know what, I'm going to stay with my wife. And I just torn the paper and called the coach and say, hey, man, I'm sorry, I'm not going to come this year. And then the next year, there's a few other things that were happening, you know, something personal, something at school, something here, something there. And then I decided to transfer for real. And Cal was the last school I sent an email to. And I said, no way I can get in here because it's Cal. You know, I'm not getting here with a 2.5 GPA from, you know, just not getting here. Immediately, I left my phone and I went outside. I don't even remember what I was doing, but I got back and I had the voicemail from Coach Mike Gibson from Cal. He said, he was talking for a minute and I can remember the last words he said, we'll do anything to get you. What do we need to do to get you here in August? I was like, okay. I call him right back. He got me the plane ticket within the 2 days to go visit Cal. I also visited a few other colleges and decided to go Cal because of the academics first and then athletics second. Or I don't even know. They're equal to me. They were equal at that time. So decided to transfer to Cal. I was still running for my national team 2012, 2013. I made European championships every year since 2011, European championships. I'm 23 years old, two world championships later in life after graduating. And then Olympic team 2016. Then I had an amazing start to 2018 season, but then I got diagnosed with testicular cancer, and then that went down the hill pretty quickly. So 2019, it's I tried to bounce back too fast after the chemo treatment, and that did not go too well. I was running just like my freshman year in college. I could not. I thought I was breaking world records, but then I seen time, and I just, man, this is not good. I need to step back. So I've been training since, getting ready, and yeah, that's a short story. Long story short, or short story long, however you want to call it.
Yeah, so you've been competing at a high level for a long time now, and I know that you've been part of the Serbian national team. You're now the record holder. Do those records still exist? Do you still hold them for the 60 and the 110?
Yes, so for 60 hurdles indoors, I still own that record. The 110 outdoors, yes, still stands strong. And honestly, I really, really hope somebody breaks it really soon, but I don't see that happening. It's just a lot of talent gets wasted when they're young and they don't become any better when they get older, you know?
Right.
So I was never good when I was young. Maybe that's why I got better when I grew up, kind of type of deal. So there is a little message to kids right now, whoever's listening, if you're not good, don't be frustrated. I was never good until I got to college. So just do your best, and patience is the key, you know. Don't get frustrated.
It is. Well, and I think the cool thing about your story is that, I mean, obviously you were still good in high school. You were a great athlete and were able to get into Asheville. But then you improved throughout college. And so by the time you graduated from Cal, you were able to then go pro with running. And even then, it wasn't until, 2016 when you made the Olympics and competed well at the Olympics. And so we see that you continue to improve, you know, throughout your career. So I think that's an important part of your story. What do you attribute that to? Why do you think you are able to continue to improve? Even, you know, as you got older, a lot of people see a sharp decline, as you get into your 20s, but you continue to improve. Why do you think that is?
First of all, I want to say thank you to my wife, my family, my agent, my coach. Without those people, I don't think I would be where I am today or where I was at my peak of my career. You need a good team behind you. And so when, you know, you watch track meet and you see somebody winning races, you only see that one person. Believe me, that's not just one person. I have 10 people on my team. I have a physical therapist. I have a doctor. I have a nutritionist. I have the team doctor. I have psychologists. I have agent, coach. I mean, that's just 8 people I name right now. And me, 9. So it's not just me on the race. And I'm not the highest level of this competition. So imagine somebody who's number one in the world, what they do. So yes, and getting better, you know, you usually see people in college run really, really well. And then when they sign a professional deal, they start running slower. They're not as competitive. Right. I think one of the reasons is money plays a decent part of it. You know, you can see, in my opinion, collegiate basketball is better than professional basketball because all these guys want to sign pro deals. So they're playing for something. They're looking, okay, I can get this money, or somebody is not even driven by the money. You know, who else, who knows what they want? They just maybe want to be of whatever, Miami Heat, you know, or Sacramento Kings. They just want to be on that team. So they're playing really, really well to earn the spot on there. But once they get there, they're just kind of, oh, I made it, you know? Right. In collegiate track it's brutal. Not in my heat actually the final race of 2014 indoor nationals, all 8 guys made the Olympic team in 2016.
Wow.
That's 2 years earlier. We're talking Barbados, Jamaica, US, Serbia, Canada. I don't know where the other 2 guys were from. But all these guys made the Olympic team in 2016. So that's very competitive. You know, they were graduating in 2014. We're getting into 2016. You know, you were still running well. But sometimes you run so well just to get that contract and then you go down. Another thing why people don't get as fast anymore is because in college you run all kinds of events. You run 100, you run a 200, you run a relay, you run hurdles, you go long jump, you don't do this, you go that. You sign a pro deal, that won't let you do a lot of things because it's a potential injury risk. So if you are a professional runner and you run hurdles, you run hurdles. That's it. And you might have 10 races in a year where I have 10 races in my first 3 meets of the season in college. So you need to keep competing in order to stay. I don't like saying the word shape, but you need to stay in shape as what your body is used to. You can't just cut something down and expect something to come. It doesn't go that way. You have to kind of mold that you have to stick to, I guess. Yeah.
Now, I think there's a good lesson here in playing, you know, running more than one event or playing more than one sport. So a lot of people say specialize, just do one thing. But I think what you've just mentioned here is if you're doing multiple things, it's helping you cross train. It's helping you stay motivated. So I think there are some real benefits there to not specializing, especially at a really young age. Too many kids are, you know, from 4th grade on are only doing one thing, and I think that's hurting them.
Yeah, and you're more marketable to coaches, especially if you're in track. If you are running more events, you know, you're more likely, in my opinion, to get a scholarship than if you're running one event. You have to be an outstanding athlete in one event to get a full scholarship. But if you can cover 3 events, you know, they might look aside a little bit and say, hey, this person has potential to score in all 3 events, so why wouldn't I take somebody that can score 15 points instead of 10 in one, you know? It's one of those things as well. So also playing other sports, football, baseball, and some schools, you know, some big schools might not let you do both, but some smaller schools will make you do both because they'll pay a partial scholarship, half football, half baseball, half track, half whatever, you know. If you do more events, you're just more marketable, but You also have to be conscious about the marks. You can't just, email somebody and say, hey, I ran cross country and I run hurdles. Wait, you do what? It has to have some kind of correlation. You know, you can't just run a cross country. If you do, that's great. And you know, it's amazing that you can do both. But if you're running hurdles, you should be, I don't know, maybe long jump and pure sprints, you know, or you can do all kinds of jumps, like long jump, triple jump. That's a good combo, you know. It's just more marketable to coaches where, you know, they go to back to their head coaches and they say, hey, I have the guy who can cover three events and possibly a relay, you know. They're more likely to take that person than one outstanding athlete. So if you're fast, you can do it all, but some people are not. But you have to find something, you know. You can't just do one thing. And like you said, early age, if somebody gets specialized in grade 4 or 5 or 6, yeah, that's great. They might become a good athlete, but they might get burned out, you know. I just like the aspect of all the events and learning something new and trying something new, you know. It never gets boring. It's just like soccer. You never know what the game is going to look like. The ball is round, they say here. In Serbia, they say the ball is round. It can't go anyway. Anybody can win. Well, there's 10 hurdles. Anybody can win. You know, you can bang a hurdle. You can mess up start. You have to stay focused, I guess, and push for what the big picture is. You can't focus on the little things. Yeah, you can focus on the little things along the way, but you should be focused on the bigger picture. And
right.
I think that's what drove me to become one of the best in my country, you know. And I always wanted to get better. I was never satisfied with how I did. So,
well, let's talk about being the best now. I want to talk about Rio for at least a little bit here. Okay. What was it like first to qualify for the Olympics? And then what was your experience like being able to represent your country and go down to Rio?
Okay, so some countries like the U.S., let's take that for example. You have so many people there that run the qualifying time. So in order to qualify, the International Olympic Committee, they'll take only 3 people from a country. Unless you're a medalist, a champion from the previous games. So they can take 4. The champion goes a wild card, and then 3 people qualify as their Olympic trials. In Serbia, we don't have 3 people with the standard, so I only had to qualify with the time, which was at that time was 13:47, and I ran 13:37. So I only needed to run the time, but only running that time is just – it's hard. It's not just, oh, you're fine. You just need to run the time. Yeah, that's okay. But you still need to qualify. And that time will put you, if you're running any year, it will put you top 30 in the world. It's not just, you know, a time. The year prior to Rio, I qualified the World Championships in Beijing. I was 37 in the world with 13:50. I did not qualify as a time qualifier, but I qualify as I was ranked in the world in certain numbers. So top 40 goes, even if you don't have the standard. I don't know if that is case in the Olympics, but I think in the Olympics, you have to have a qualifying time from those countries or you don't go. So Rio was amazing. A long ways. I came from the U.S. to Serbia and then flew the next day to Rio. So that kind of got me off my schedule a little bit. It's just crazy travels. I got there 5 o'clock in the morning, took a little nap, went to cafeteria. You guys hear all these scary stories from Rio. Well, I came back and I had no ceiling in my bathroom. It has fallen into my shower. So, but check this out. You won't even believe how fast I got fixed. I went downstairs to my Olympic committee people to tell them. It maybe took 30 minutes. I was waiting for somebody. I got back and I was walking with them in my room and I said, hey, here's the ceiling. Where is the ceiling? They fixed it. They fixed it in 30 minutes. So that was one funny story. But it's really amazing to see all those people in, like, you know, different jackets, different jerseys. You have all these different sports. In hurdles, I literally knew every single person that qualified from the collegiate career. And not so much collegiate, but professional career. So right. We kind of know each other. We hang out with each other. You know, if you're on any professional circuit in hurdles or any other track event, you travel all over the world. You compete against the same people all the time. It's just, okay, I'm running in Paris. Tomorrow I'm running in London. You know, tomorrow I'm running in New York. It's all the same people. We are all literally all on the same planes going together, traveling together. So we knew each other. A lot of people know each other there, especially if that's not your second Olympics. You know, if you team sports are usually all the same people, basically. So it was fun to meet basketball and the water polo team. You know, they did really, really well. I get to meet some other other sports, some other athletes, you know, from other countries, other coaches. You share your experiences, you listen to theirs, and it's a really good, I like to say, a bubble of connections, you know. I just actually LinkedIn a few days ago, a guy from Uruguay sent me a text message, LinkedIn message. Hey, hope you're doing well. We met in Rio, you know. We're planning on doing some kind of seminar. Would you be interested in coming here? Not right now, but I would when things go down, you know. So things like that, you know, just it's pretty cool to meet all these people and see different cultures. And Brazil was awesome, but that they had a Zika thing going on there, so we really didn't go out of the village too much. But one really amazing experience overall, I would have to say. If you are close to it and you think you can do it. And even if you don't think you can do it, push for it. You don't ever know. It's an amazing experience. I'll do it all over again. If I can go back to school, I'll go back to school, you know, competing in school. I would repeat it all, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, you've certainly had a lot of success. And to be able to represent your country and compete in the Olympics, you'll carry that the rest of your life. That's an incredible accomplishment. To those kids who are watching this, who would like to compete at the highest level, what's your advice to them as far as, you know, what helped you make separation from just being a good and even a great athlete to becoming an elite athlete? What made the difference?
You have to know your priorities. Whether that's academics or athletics, back to your question, if you want to be good at something you do in athletics, you have to give up something, whether that's a social life, maybe even grades in school. It's bad to say that, but something has to lack, you know. If you can manage to do both or all three things, academics, social life, and athletics, good for you, and you should be good at all of it. But some things you really need to know when to say no to something. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, my friends were calling me, hey, you want to go to the lake? You want to go ride a bike? I'm sorry, I have practice, you know. And later in life, I came to some people tell me, hey, you're lucky to get a scholarship. Whoa, I'm not lucky. I worked 20 years for this. You know, it's not lucky. I earned this. Every single person that have a full scholarship, they earned it. They're good at something and they are rewarded. That is not given, it's earned. And there's a big difference. So patience is a big thing. But yeah, just you have to have the heart too. You can't just do it to do it. When I coach kids, you know, the first thing I say to them, I recently worked with a collegiate football coach, 37-year-old veteran from collegiate coaching, and also the Cleveland Browns coach. I coached his kids to get faster in the 40 yards. The first day I told him, I said, if you guys are here to do this just to do it so you can say, hey, I trained for this. It was nice knowing you, you know, but no thanks. Thanks, no thanks. So if you're there just to wing it, don't do it at all. If you're there, you know, it's disrespectful to everybody around you. You're wasting your coach's time. You're wasting your parents' time. You're wasting your own time, first of all. You need to be, if you're doing something, do it all in. And that's the way to succeed. Honestly, I think if you are just doing something partially, you know, it's, let's say you're making I love comparing cars to people because we're a machine, is just like a car. You know, if you don't eat well, you don't perform well. If you don't put a good gasoline in your car, your car is not going to run well, right? So I just like to say that if a person was to put some bad parts in your car, it will not run well. So you need to do it correctly and in a good order, in a good way, in order to perform well. So you can have a Ferrari body, but if you have a Fiat engine, it's not going to run it, you know? So you have to be 100% in. If you're doing something, do it to do it, and do it because you love it. Don't do it just because somebody's making you doing it, or because, I don't know, you just want to turn some heads. Do it because you enjoy it. And I learned that later in life. Yeah. I was impatient when I was little, and that costs you things, you know. You want everything now and then, you know. Well, I'm not good enough this meet. Let's say that was this past Saturday. I would double my training for the next meet. Horrible idea. Don't do that. So you got to be patient. You got to trust the process. And like I said, focus on the big picture, because that's what matters the most. Your biggest picture later. It's just how it is.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Well, Milan, it's been really great having you on the show today and hearing a little bit about your story. If kids want to follow you or see you online, what's the best platform to connect with you?
They connect with me. They can connect with any social media. It would be my first and last name. I believe all my social media is my first last name, 110. They can find me on all the social media there. My email is my first and last name, 110@yahoo.com. They can hit me up there at any time. Cool. I'm happy to discuss anything. Any parents who have some problems with the kids, I'm happy to talk to them as well. Some advice, you know, anything really that I can do to be helpful, I'm happy and I'm here to do it, because I think it's really important to have somebody looking for the future of the kids, you know?
Yeah, cool. Well, really appreciate you coming on today and spending this time with us. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Virtual School Assembly. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else you listen to virtual assemblies. And leave us a rating and review so we know what you learned and took away from this virtual assembly. Videos and show notes are found at virtualschoolassembly.com. And if you're a school leader and you're looking for a speaker for virtual or traditional in-school assemblies, or if you're looking for some teacher training, I'd love to connect with you to see how I can help. You can check out my website at tylerchristensen.com. Thanks. You are super duper. Let's go out and make the world a better place. Bye-bye.